Service, National Radio Club.
Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for July 2006. This is issue number 256, and I'm Fred Bobie, the publisher of the DX Audio Service. My address is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805-1835. If you live in the United States or Canada and would like to become a member of the DX Audio Service, the cost of a subscription is $28. To Europe and elsewhere, it's $40. Those prices are also the renewal rates. Tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep your cassettes. If you'd like to subscribe, make a check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that I just mentioned, or simply log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org and sign up using our PayPal credit card system. You can also sign up to edxn.com and get your DX Audio Service for your computer or iPod player in stereo. A subscription to EDXN is only $15, and you have access not only to the interactive forums and groups, but also an MP3 download of the DX Audio Service and a PDF download of the DX News Magazine, just for over half the price of one publication alone. Just point your browser to http://www.e-dxn.com and subscribe online with our PayPal credit card system, or contact Wayne Heinen if you want to pay by check. You must have the ability to download a large MP3 file to enjoy the DX Audio Service in this fashion. Well, it's that time of the tape when we have to check into what's going on the AM band, see who's changing what. That's why we call it the AM switch, and that's why we call him Bill Hill.
Thanks, Fred, and welcome again, everyone, to AM Switch for the DX Audio Service for July 2006. As always, let's start out with the call letter changes. On 610 WJFN, Hawkinsville, Georgia has changed their call to WCEH. On 1010 KZNY, Milwaukee, Oregon, their new call is KSZN. On 1060 KTOZ, Springfield, Missouri has changed to KBFL. 1160 WMLB, East Point, Georgia, they've changed to WWAA trading calls with 1690 Avondale Estates, Georgia. So on 1160, they're WWAA, and on 1690, they're WMLB. 1330, a new station in Ontario, New York, has taken the call of WMJQ. 1370, WWLG, Pikesville, Maryland, they've chosen WVIE for their new call sign. On 1460, WNVI, North Vernon, Indiana, has changed to WJCP. 1480, WZFB, Fair Bluff, North Carolina, has changed to WSRC. 1490, WNDV, South Bend, Indiana, they've changed to WDND. 1490, a new station in Spanish Valley, Utah, their call is KCPX, reviving an old call from the Beehive State. 1510 WDID Highland, Illinois, their new call WXOZ. And finally, on 1580 WDND South Bend, Indiana, they've changed to WHLY. Well, this category we're calling They're Back. 1180 KYDZ Bellevue, Nebraska, returned to the air June 8th after going silent on February 28th when their X-band sister station KOZN 1620 turned 5. They are simulcasting KOYL 1020 with Radio Disney. There has been a movement afoot by some of the X-band owners to do away with the 5-year rule, which they agreed to when they received their X-band license. I thought the whole idea was to clear up some of the interference on the 540 to 1600 kHz band. Turning our attention now to construction permits on the air, 730 KQPM West Memphis, Arkansas. License to cover has been granted for their CP to change to U4-1000-1000 from a new four-tower site using all four towers day and night. WPEN 950 in Philadelphia has been granted two license to covers, or should that be licenses to cover? Well, anyway, the first one is for U2, 5,000 days, 21,000 watts at night with the night facilities at the WWDB860 site. And the second license to cover is for auxiliary facilities of N3, no watts in the day, but 3,800 at night from their three-tower day site. 1180 KHCM Honolulu, Hawaii, they have a CP to move from 1170 with U1 1000-1000 After being silent for a couple of months, the station was heard on 1180 playing country and western tunes and IDing between selections as 1180 on your dial, KHCM, and 1180 on your radio dial, AM Country, KHCM. As of my deadline, there is still no official blessing for the move in the FCC database, but obviously they are on at least testing. 1270 WMKT, Charlevoix, Michigan. They're now on the air with U2, 27,000 watts during the day and 5,000 at night. 1310 WCCW, Traverse City, Michigan. License to cover has been issued for U4, 15,000 watts during the day, 7,500 watts at night, from four towers using three during the day and four at night. 1320 WAGF, Dothan, Alabama. License to cover has been issued for U1, 1,000 daytime watts, 92 watts at night. That reduces their nighttime power from 1,000 watts, and now they are non-directional. 1370 WGIV, Pineville, North Carolina. License to cover has been issued for the move to Pineville from Gastonia, with 3,000 daytime watts, 45 watts at night, non-directional, from a new tower. On 1450, a new station, WVAX in Charlottesville, Virginia, has received their license. They'll be a kilowatt day and night, non-directional. On 1470, WAZN, Watertown, Massachusetts, is now licensed here, X Marlboro. They've got 1,400 watts during the day, 3,400 watts at night, U4, that's two different patterns. 1530 WVBF, Middleboro Center, Massachusetts. License to cover has been issued to increase the daytime power and add critical hours operation. They're now U1, 2,200 watts during the day, 2 watts at night, and 940 watts during critical hours. 1540 WJJT, Jellicoe, Tennessee. License to cover has been issued to add night operation. The new facilities are now U1, 1,000 daytime watts, 1 watt during nighttime hours, and CH, critical hours, 500 watts. 1560 WTOD, Toledo, Ohio. The CP has been granted to move to a new two-tower site and reduce power to become D3, 2,500 watts during the day, and of course nothing at night. 1570 KBCV, Hollister, Missouri. A new station has been granted program test authority for U4, 5,000 watts during the day, 3,000 watts at night, from four towers using three during the day and four at night. Hollister is near Branson, close to the Arkansas border. Also on 1570 WNCA, Siler City, North Carolina, a license to operate has been granted for an increase in daytime power to become U1, 5,000 watts during the day and 282 watts at night. 1580 KTGR, Columbia, Missouri. License to cover has been issued for a move to a slightly taller tower, necessitating a power decrease day and night. New facilities are now U1, 214 watts during the day and 8 watts at night. Grants for new stations. On 560, a new station will be coming on the air in Dawson, Yukon Territory. The CRTC has approved an application by the CBC for a new station here with U1, 400 watts day and night, to replace CBDN-FM in Dawson. The new station will simulcast CFWH-570 in Whitehorse. The CBC has stated that it has been approached by a local communication society who has expressed interest in taking over the FM station to operate as a community-owned station. 890, a new station in Maybank, Texas. A CP has been granted for U4, 20,000 watts during the day, 250 watts at night, from a three-tower transmitter site. By accepting this CP, the licensee agrees to surrender the license of co-owned KTXV 890 in nearby Frankston, Texas. 940, a new station in Dillon, Montana, will eventually take to the air. They've been granted U4, 10,000 watts during the day, 350 watts at night, from a two-tower site. A construction permit has been granted for a new station in Ontario, New York, which has already got the call of WMJQ, as we reported earlier. They'll have 1,000 watts during the day, 2,000 watts at night, with two different patterns, that's U4, from a three-tower site using all three, both day and night. Both patterns are directed due north. And finally, 1490, a new station in Spanish Valley, Utah. They've been granted 1,000 watts day and night, U1. And now here are some changes that have been granted to existing facilities. On 660, WPYT, Wilkinsburg, Pennsylvania, has been granted an increase in power to become 1400 watts daytime only non-directional. 740 WLTQ Charleston, South Carolina has been granted a CP to consolidate their operations at the current nighttime site and decrease their daytime power. When built, WLTQ will become 1100 watts during the day, 103 watts at night. You won. 740 WRWB Harrogate, Tennessee, a CP has been granted to move to a new transmitter site and reduce their daytime power to become U1, 900 daytime watts, 7 watts at night. 940 WHIT Hudsonville, Michigan has been granted a CP to change their city of license from South Haven, Michigan, with D1, 250 watts, daytime only. 1100 WISS Berlin, Wisconsin has been granted a CP to move to 1100 from 1090 and double their power to become D1, 1000 daytime watts and nothing at night. 1180 WSQR Sycamore, Illinois, a CP has been granted to move here from 1560 with 900 watts daytime, 1 watt at night, non-directional. 1190 KREB Bentonville, Bella Vista, Arkansas, a CP has been granted to increase their power to become D1, 5,000 watts during the day and 0 at night. 1260 WI2 XSO in Mayagüez, Puerto Rico, a CP has been granted to increase the daytime power of this repeater for WISO to become U4, 5,000 watts during the day and 1,000 watts at night. 1270 WNOG Naples, Florida, a CP has been granted to increase their nighttime power to become U4, 5,000 watts day and night, and make adjustments to the night pattern. Also on 1270 KFLC Fort Worth, Texas, the license to cover has been issued for their daytime power upgrade. They are now U4, 50,000 watts during the day, and 5,000 watts at night. 1290 WTMI Hartford, Connecticut, a CP has been granted to change the city of license to West Hartford and at night service. When operational, they'll be U1, 490 watts during the day and 11 watts at night. 1320 KSCR Eugene, Oregon, a CP has been granted for U1, 600 daytime watts, 40 watts at night, relocating to an existing taller tower, co-locating with KKNX 840 and KLZS 1450. WEBY 1330 Milton, Florida, a CP has been granted for a ×5 daytime power increase. When operational, WEBY will be U5, 25,000 watts during the day and 79 watts at night. 1450 WNBY Newberry, Michigan, CP has been granted to construct a new shorter tower at the location of their former tower, which collapsed. When the tower is built and WNBY returns to the air, they will once again be U1, 1,000 watts day and night, non-directional. WRMN 1470, Elgin, Illinois, a CP has been granted to increase their nighttime power to become U2, 1,000 daytime watts, 1,300 watts at night. This CP supplants the one they had for U2, 1,000 daytime watts and 1,500 watts at night. 1510 KYOL, Littleton, Colorado, a CP has been granted for 9,500 watts during the day, 19,000 watts at night, U4. 1540 KGBC Galveston, Texas, a CP has been granted for U4, 2,500 watts during the day, 250 watts at night. They'll be adding two new towers to their site. 1550 WAZX Smyrna, Georgia, a CP has been granted for U5, 50,000 watts during the day, 16 watts at night from a new four-tower site. 1550 KMAD Medill, Oklahoma, CP has been granted to move to a new 145-foot tower. They'll remain U1, 250 watts during the day and 9 watts at night. 1570 WBGX Harvey, Illinois, a CP has been granted to increase their day power. They'll now be U4, 1500 watts during the day and 500 watts at night. 1580 WSRF Fort Lauderdale, Florida, a CP has been granted for U4, 10,000 watts during the day, 1500 watts at night, from the four-tower site of co-owned WAVS 1170. And 1590 KMOZ Rolla, Missouri, a license has been issued to change from commercial to non-commercial status. License cancellations and call letters deleted. 920 WBAA West Lafayette, Indiana, 1010 WRJR Portsmouth, Virginia, as WHKT 1650's 5-year anniversary on the X-Band is celebrated. 1110 WSLV Ardmore, Tennessee. 1500 WDEE Reed City, Michigan. Also on 1500 WOLY in Battle Creek, Michigan. And 1520 WQMA Marks, Mississippi. Now, we've done some investigating on these, and as near as we can make out, with the exception of WRJR, all these licenses were canceled due to the fact that the stations failed to submit their renewal applications on time. In the case of WQMA 1520 in Marks, Mississippi, it seems that they were issued a notice of apparent liability, as the FCC calls it, back in 2004. They never responded to that fine, and now they're asking that the fine be reduced because of their inability to pay. They've also filed for a renewal at this time. Tying up some odds and ends this month, once again propagating the airwaves after being silent, the following stations: KIYU 910 Galena, Alaska, KYET 1180 Williams, Arizona, WLNR 1230 in Kinston, North Carolina, KAMQ 1240 Carlsbad, New Mexico, WOND 1400 Pleasantville, New Jersey is back on temporary facilities. We'll get to that in a minute. And we're just in, WCKL 560 Catskill, New York has fired up the transmitter June 2nd only to prevent the lapse of their license. They were simulcasting with WZCR-FM Cruisin 93.5 and leaving their 1 kilowatt day transmitter on overnight. No telling how long this will last. Reported to have gone off, KUHD 1150, Port Neches, Texas, WWSD 1230, Quincy, Florida, WOND 1400, as we mentioned a minute ago, and WTKU 1490, both in Pleasantville, New Jersey, were silent following a fire which destroyed their common transmitter building, containing both stations' transmitters and associated equipment. But as we mentioned, WOND has returned using temporary facilities. Also off, WHWH 1350 Princeton, New Jersey, WTNL 1390 Reidsville, Georgia, KETX 1440 Livingston, Texas, WVKO 1580 Columbus, Ohio, and KMDO 1600 Fort Scott, Kansas. I received an inquiry from a reader of the print edition of the column asking what's up with the application from a Pacific Island station under FCC control to change frequencies. Notably, WVUV 648 requested a move to 720, and now KUAM 612 has requested 630. Well, it's those darn American cars with a 10 kilohertz spacing on their digital radios. I can't believe it would be that expensive to add a 910 spacing feature, as most quality communications receivers have. What, 50 cents maybe? The KUAM application clearly states this fact for applying for the change. A lot of good transatlantic and transpacific DX is garnered simply due to these stations being on split frequencies. It just happens that 630 and 720 are part of the normal 9 kHz spacing arrangement, as are 540, 810, 900, 990, 1080, 1170, 1260, 1350, 1440, 1530, and 1620. I'm sure you see the pattern. Well, one station has been fined this past month. WTMR 800 in Camden, New Jersey has been fined $4,000 for failing to reduce their power at night. Well, congratulations are in order for Frank Aiden Jr. of Boise, who has been elected vice president of the History of Idaho Broadcasting Foundation. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this month. My thanks go out to Sean Axelrod, Wayne Heinen, Jerry Starr, Ernie Wesolowski, and Richard Wood for contributions this month. And, of course, to you for being a part of the DX Audio Service. Well, the clock on the bunkhouse wall says it's time to saddle up and head to Florida, where we check in with John Bowker for this month's travelogue. National
Radio Club. Well, thanks very much, Bill Hale. Hello, everybody. I'm glad to be back with you again this month to continue our travelogue around the United States with our dial locked at 960 kilohertz. We're going to be starting in the northern part of Florida. You know, Florida's a funny state at 960. There are three stations in my logbook. I only have one of them on tape. The reason is we have the Lake City station. You'll hear that in a minute. But the station in Sebring has left 960, and a new station's come on 960 down on the South Atlantic coast. It's a five-hour drive from here, so we just haven't been down. Anyway, we're going to start in Lake City, Florida, as we begin the July 2006 DX Audio Service Travelogue.
This is 960 AM WGRO, Lake City.
AP Network News, I'm Dick Iuliano. The United States is going to make it a little easier for Haitian boat people to claim political asylum in the United States.
Now, that recording was made in 1994, just to show you that immigration has been an issue, a hotbed item, for a long time. We're going to be moving down to the middle of the peninsula of Florida at this point and listen to a station that was at 960 on the dial in 1989.
For the music of yesterday and today, we remind you, you're tuned to WJCM Sebring. It's 9 o'clock.
From ABC News, I'm Doug Limerick.
Well, now, as I mentioned, that station no longer operates at 960 on the dial. They moved up to 1050, which was good news for the people at West Palm Beach because it meant they could have a new station at 960 on the dial. So that wraps up the state of Florida for us on this trip, but let's go up around the north end of the Gulf of Mexico, and we come to Mobile, Alabama, right on the Florida border, of course. And now, for years and years, this station in Mobile was a Christian teaching station, but just about the turn of the century, they switched over to gospel format. And by the way, at night, you're going to have trouble hearing them to the north-northeast. They drop down to 1,000 watts at night and have a very deep null to the north-northeast.
Yes, we've got a feeling things are gonna be better. Things are gonna be better. Yeah, things are gonna be better after one.
Your solid gospel station for all of the Gulf Coast. We're 960 AM WLPR, Pritchard, Mobile.
With SRN News, I'm Andrea Mikus in Washington. Senator John Kerry officially declares his candidacy for the Democratic presidential nomination.
So that kind of dates the tape as being about 4 years old, wouldn't you agree? Well, now, one of the reasons that WLPR has such a deep null to the north is this next station we're going to hear from, which was Birmingham, Alabama's first station back in 1925, it says here. It came on the air as WBRC. And changed to WERC back in the 1982 time frame. Let's listen to Birmingham's news talk station.
Thanks for joining us this morning. We'll see you next Saturday morning at 7 o'clock. Thanks to Ken Kirk for the help this morning. William Jenkins doing the screen situation. Dan Parker produces. The Braves won 3-0. Matt will talk about that right after 9 o'clock this morning. And WERC Birmingham, straight up 9 o'clock.
AM 960 WERC News Center. Good morning. I'm Evelyn Jansen. Residents of a Pleasant Grove neighborhood were shocked last night when a small engine plane crashed into a local home.
Oh, boy. You know, where I live is right in the glide path going into MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa, the Middle East Command, and we get some pretty big airplanes coming right in over the house. Yeah, it makes you wonder. Now, you just have to love this next station. It's right in the middle of Mississippi, in a city of, market of probably 20,000 people. Now, of course, they want to attract a local audience by having a lot of local news, and they do have a remarkably large news department. But back in the good old days, I think we would have called this station MOR, Middle of the Road. We'll do everything to attract any audience at any time. Greenwood, Mississippi. I love it.
You've been listening to Politically Incorrect Music, featuring Rusty Humphries, brought to you by TRN.
WABG, Greenwood, News Talk 960.
But wouldn't you love to manage a station like that? Wow. Well, while we're still in the South, what do you say we tune in on some typical local, rural, Southern programming?
Thank you, Mrs. Wilby. I appreciate you. We got to go. Bye-bye. Folks, that's going to do it on this Monday edition of the Swap Shop. Thanks, and we'll talk to you in the morning. for the finest in Southern gospel music. It's WGLH, 960 AM here in La Follette.
Okay, that's not quite my speed, I must admit, but I do enjoy radio when obviously the people are having a good time, as he was. Now, La Follette is just north of Knoxville, a short distance off I-75, so that's an easy one to get. But down halfway between Chattanooga and Nashville in the middle of the state, off the interstate system, is the town of McMinnville. And we had to go right into McMinnville to get this next one for you.
And partly cloudy, a slight chance of showers in 81 for Friday. That's your forecast for AM 960 WBMC. More of your favorite country, classic country, coming up. We're WBMC McMinnville, a Clear Channel station.
Say, wait a minute. That weather forecaster, that sounded a lot like Fred Richards. Have you heard Fred Richards, by the way, on any of your local stations? And if you hear Fred Richards on one of your local stations, be sure to call in the Musings line. There could be a big prize awaiting you. Kind of a contest we're running here on the audio service. Okay, enough of that. Now, let's see. Travelogue state number 22 is Ohio. And not by accident, we have the 960 station in northeast Ohio, which is not all that far from Akron, Ohio. And we're going to tell you more about what's going on in Akron, Ohio over Labor Day in a few minutes. But for right now, we're going to be listening to a station that was one of the many, many, many thousands of stations that signed on right after World War II. This was a daytimer the first few years of its life.
Northeastern Ohio's positive lifestyle station. We're WWST, Worcester.
Well, the WWST call sign stuck around until 1988, so it was around for some 40 years, huh? And then changed to WKVX. They picked up 32 watts for night operations and became an oldies station.
Rank it up. It's Oldies Radio, AM 960 WKVX in Worcester.
CNN Radio News. I'm Harry Beadle.
Well, Harry, you know, I wish you were here because I'd like to make a bet with you that you would lose. And the bet would be this. Can you tell me what station broadcast the first commercial program in the United States? No, that's wrong. I don't care what you said. It's wrong. The station was WGAZ, and those call letters stood for World's Greatest Automotive Zone. And that referred to the Studebaker automobile, which was really a prize of engineering back in the 30s and the 40s. And back in 1925, a furniture store in South Bend, Indiana, went to WGAZ and bought the entire cost of their evening's programs of music. And that was the first commercial program broadcast on American radio. I know that because WSBT claims that that's true. WGAZ indeed changed to WSBT. Let's listen to him.
Call now, 800-228-4420. That's 800-228-4420 for the Wall Street Journal, Adventures in Capitalism.
CBS News is next. WSBT South Bend. It's 2 o'clock.
CBS News, I'm John Roberts.
WSBT gets out pretty well. In fact, I DX them both from New Jersey and Vermont on more than one occasion. So, well, we're going to head out to the banks of the Mississippi River at this point. We're going to stay on the easterly side in the state of Illinois. This station operates with 1,000 watts during the daytime hours and just over 100 watts at night, and it's affiliated with the Moody Bible Institute.
That's in Psalm 149, verse 4. It's 8 o'clock. We're glad you tuned in this morning to WDLM or WDLM-FM East Moline.
Why would anyone, after going through tough circumstances, write this in a letter? We pray that God keeps the iron hot. Keep some of that trouble coming our way on a regular basis.
Well, let's see. We have one more W call station at 960 on the dial we haven't brought to you yet. It's up in Wisconsin in the vicinity of Green Bay, 1,000 watts day and night.
See for yourself. Jim's Auto Sales, located on East Green Bay Street, right here in beautiful Shawnee.
AM 960 WTCH in Channel 77 right now at the Clintonville Airport, where, speaking of beautiful, our very own Stevie West is broadcasting live at the Clintonville Airport for a very good reason. Stevie's going to tell us all about it.
Well, that's going to do it for today, because that wraps up all the W call stations, as I mentioned. And you know, you've heard every one of them at 960 on the dial, except for West Palm Beach and Prestonsburg, Kentucky. We were in Prestonsburg and went right through 2 hours with no ID from that station at 960 on the dial, so you'll have to forgive me for that. And before we part today, I want to say thanks very much to people who have contributed IDs to this collection at 960. Camille Petreca was one of the earliest ones on last month's tapes. And hey, Camille, glad to hear that you're going to be joining us in Akron over Labor Day. We look forward to seeing you there. And others who have sent in IDs are Ron Gitshire, several in this last collection, Mark Dernberger, who travels all over as we used to do, and Dale Hamm. He's getting around, too. He lives out in Kansas City these days, I guess. Josh Owens, we mentioned him last month. We also have Scott Feibusch and my old standby, Mark Strickert. I'll be back a little bit later on this edition of the audio service to tell you all about Akron and some more details we didn't cover last time, and some words about 2007's convention. Oh, so stay tuned. Here's Mark Dernberger.
National Radio Club.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Mark Dernberger here for the DX Audio Service, and it's time for our summer special. Today we look at three famous notes of broadcasting history. When you hear the chime, it's NBC time, by choice, the nation's voice. An article written by Bill Harris, copyright 2000. Almost anyone who ever listened to radio has at some time or other heard the famous three-note chime that has been the long-time trademark of NBC. These chimes were used on the hour and half-hour to announce station breaks on the network. I became interested in the history of the chimes after discovering a book at the library titled The Fourth Chime by NBC, printed in 1944. I had never heard of a fourth chime, and my curiosity was aroused. I checked out the book to find out more about this extra chime. However, the book told very little about the fourth chime, dealing mainly with the role NBC played in the reporting of special worldwide news events, primarily during World War II. I began to seek more information about this fourth chime. Was it a different note from the other three, or maybe a repeat of one of the others? Where could I get a recording of this fourth chime? A letter to the editor of Antique Radio Classified brought some results. My request for more information was published in the December 1994 issue of ARC's Radio Miscellanea column, and shortly I received a letter with a copy of an article by Rod Phillips about the history of the chimes. I also made inquiries on the old-time radio digest on the Internet. I was particularly looking for a recording of the fourth chime. The response was great, to say the least, and I began to be able to put the pieces of the puzzle together. A recent trip to the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., also turned up more interesting information on the history of these three little notes. The birth of the chimes. As I have continued to gather information since starting this project, there appears to be several versions of how the chimes came to be. Perhaps only those early radio broadcasters who were involved with the beginning of the chimes know exactly how it happened, but hopefully the information I've collected will shed some light. NBC New York. The National Broadcasting Company was incorporated on September 9, 1926, under the laws of Delaware. It was a corporation owned jointly by RCA, 50%, GE, 30%, and Westinghouse, 20%. The NBC network began broadcasting on November 15th of the same year from studios WEAF in New York City.
This is the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.
This program came to you from New York. This is the Blue Network.
There was a combined group of 19 scattered affiliated stations using more than 3,500 circuit miles of telephone wires to connect them. At the end of a program, the NBC announcer would read the call letters of all the NBC stations carrying the program. As the network added more stations, this became impractical and would cause some confusion among the affiliates as to the conclusion of network programming and when the station break should occur on the hour and half hour. Some sort of coordinating signal was needed to signal the affiliates for these breaks and allow each affiliate to identify separately. Three men at NBC were given the task of finding a solution to the problem and coming up with such a coordinating signal. These men were Oscar Hansen from NBC Engineering, Ernest LaPrada, an NBC orchestra leader, and Phillips Carlin, an NBC announcer. A set of hand dinner chimes was purchased from the Lush Silver Company of Manhattan, and during the years 1927 and 1928, these men experimented with a seven-note sequence of chimes, the notes G, C, G, E, G, C, E, but it proved too complicated for the announcers to consistently strike in the correct order. So the sequence was reduced to four notes, G, 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 E. Sometime later, two G's were dropped and a C added to become the three notes G, E, C. These three notes were first broadcast on November 29, 1929. The notes were struck at 59 minutes, 30 seconds, and at 29 minutes, 30 seconds past the hour. So where did the chimes originate? Here are four stories. WSB Atlanta. I received information from a person who worked for WSB-TV in Atlanta, Georgia for 24 years that the chimes had their origin at Atlanta radio station WSB. Supporting this, Paul Terry phoned in to the St. Petersburg Times, and this appeared in the February 9, 1995 action column. Quote, I read in your January 17th action column that NBC officials said the chimes used for network identification are the musical notes G, E, and C, and originally stood for General Electric Corporation, part owner of NBC. I think if you research this a little farther, you'll find the chimes really originated in Atlanta, Georgia, at radio station WSB. In the late 1920s, WSB station manager Lambden Kay began using a miniature xylophone to hit those same three notes to signal station breaks. Later, when WSB joined the NBC network, WSB cut in one day during a Georgia Tech football game with the chimes. NBC liked it so well that it got permission to use the chimes for its own identification. So WSB claims to be the first radio station to use a musical identification at the end of its programs. And then there's WGY in Schenectady. The following information received via email from a former program director at WGY, which was the flagship station of the GE company at Schenectady. WGY went on the air February 22, 1922. During this program manager's tenure, the station celebrated its 50th anniversary. In doing research in preparation for the history, the researchers found what they believe pointed to the chime's origination at WGY. The research indicated that about a year after the station went on the air, the notes G, E, C were used as an identification and stood for the General Electric Company. The notes there were sounded on a piano. From KFI Los Angeles. This station, which went on the air in April of 1922, also lays claim to be where the chimes originated. Broadcaster historian Frank Breezy related the following to me. In 1972, he wrote and produced the 50th anniversary program for KFI. One of the NBC stars appearing on the program was longtime announcer Ken Carpenter. He began his career at KFI and related to Mr. Breezy that upon joining KFI in 1930, he was told that the chimes originated at the station when it opened in 1922. They wanted a way to identify the closing of programs, so they used the familiar notes, and this was later picked up by NBC. So we have four stories to choose from, all claiming to be the originators of these famous three little notes of broadcasting history. To whom do we give the credit? Without any concrete documentation or first-hand knowledge of someone who was actually there at NBC when the decision was made to use those notes, I don't think we can really say just who the credit goes to. All of the stories are plausible and no doubt true to the extent that WSB, WGY, and KFI were using those tones, or a combination thereof, for an audible identification before the birth of NBC. As far as the decision to use them at NBC and from what source they came, as I stated earlier in this article, only those who were directly involved really know the true story. Sadly, they are no longer with us to confirm what we wish to know. Perhaps buried somewhere in some long-forgotten NBC archive lies the answer. But from wherever they came, those three little notes became one of the most recognized sound trademarks in broadcasting history. The fourth chime, a confidential alert. The fourth chime is what started my interest in this subject. The book, The Fourth Chime, stated it was originally contrived as a confidential alert to signal the members of the NBC News staff, engineers, and other personnel responsible for broadcasting the news. The book states that it was first heard on the air with the crash of the dirigible Hindenburg in 1937. However, an NBC interdepartment correspondence memo dated April 7, 1933, documents the conception and initial purpose of the fourth chime. The memo states in part, "In anticipation of the spring and summer months, when many in key positions will not always be available at home telephones, the following emergency call system will go into effect on Monday morning, April 16th. The memo states that whenever a fourth tone is heard on the network chimes rung at 15-minute intervals, it will indicate that someone on an attached list is wanted. Upon hearing this fourth chime, all personnel on the list are instructed to call into the PBX operator to ascertain whether or not the emergency call is for them. The chime would continue at 15-minute intervals over stations WEAF and WJZ until the wanted person communicated with the PBX operator." I believe that the above confirms that the original purpose of the fourth chime was not necessarily an alert to signal news-breaking events, but simply a call system, much like a paging system today. The fourth chime continued to be used throughout World War II to alert the NBC News Department and the radio audience of special news bulletins. And again, we quote from a memo, "The fourth chime will ring out again and again from the NBC newsrooms in New York whenever events of utmost significance demand the intensive nationwide coverage of the news the American people have come to expect from the National Broadcasting Company."
The National Broadcasting Company will continue its network service throughout the remainder of the night in view of the important but so far unconfirmed reports from overseas.
I received a tape of a documentary produced by a radio station in Washington, D.C., of NBC News broadcasts of the 1944 D-Day invasion of Europe. In one of the early morning bulletins, just before the announcement of the beginning of the invasion, the fourth chime can be heard. Rod Phillips wrote in his article on the history of the chimes that the fourth chime was a second strike of the C note, and this is in agreement with a June 6, 1964 NBC memo from the press department. I therefore assumed that the fourth chime sequence would be G, E, C, C. I was surprised at what I heard on the tape. The sequence of the notes was B, D, G, G. If you transpose this sequence to the key of C, they become E, G, C, C. As stated in an earlier paragraph, the note arrangement of E, G, C are the notes as originally used by radio station WSB. And coincidentally, the first three notes of the World War I song, Over There. Why did NBC use that sequence for the fourth chime? Was there some patriotic reason because of the war song, or did it just sound better than GECC? Why was it sounded in the key of G instead of the key of C? Perhaps they wanted a different sequence and tone that would not be confused with the so familiar GEC notes, and would be more likely to catch the attention of the listener and NBC News staff. According to the book, the fourth chime was sounded two times during the D-Day broadcast, once at 2:30 a.m., to put the network on a flash basis, the chime alert calling all newsmen and commentators to their microphones and key operating personnel to their stations.
The National Broadcasting Company intends to continue with its network service coast to coast throughout the rest of this night.
And then at 3:18 a.m., the chime was sounded once more.
"This is our official notification to stations affiliated with NBC that we will continue broadcasting throughout the remainder of these nighttime hours. This is the National Broadcasting Company."
Followed a second later by the Morse code V for victory, repeated five times. In an NBC memo from the press department, dated June 12, 1964, commenting on the uses of the fourth chime, there's a handwritten comment that the last use of the fourth chime was in 1985, when GE announced its merger with RCA. And those are excerpts from an article by Bill Harris, copyright 2000, entitled Three Famous Notes of Broadcasting History, the NBC Chimes. This is Mark Dernberger, and that's your summer special. We'll be back again next month with more. Till then, good listening, DXers.
And in just a second, we're going to flip over to side two of this tape for more of the DX Audio Service.
WROR, Boston.
By the way, members, if you wish to contact me, please do so by USPS mail. As I've been away a lot on business and not always available via telephone, if I do get a telephone call, I'll try to return it as soon as possible. But sometimes it's just a little hard. Here's Stevie Wonder.
I was born in Little Rock, had a childhood sweetheart. Shoot!